I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio. The question really is for this hour that we're going to spend with Luke Whittall, author, podcaster. He works in the wine business. The books that he's given us are The Sipster's Pocket Guide to 50 Must-Try BC Wines, Volumes 1, 2, and 3, and for Ontario, Volumes 1 and 2. What is a sipster? A sipster is one who observes, seeks, and sets taste trends of sipping beverages, such as wine, spirits, tea, and coffee, outside of the mainstream. And he is a sipster. He's not going to tell you who the winemaker was, or where the vineyard was, or how the growing season was, or how it tastes, none of those things. And here's what's interesting. With food and activity pairings that range from Thai noodles and pool noodles to Schubert and Hootenannies, and an index of attitudes that lets you choose a wine based on your mood, Sipsters is equal parts freewheeling and focused. That's who we're going to talk to, Luke Whittall. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Wine BC. This is BC wine country, made for wandering. Take the scenic route through warm sunshine, vineyard views, and back roads worth exploring. Sip crisp whites, savor expressive reds, settle in for live music, wide open skies, and unhurried vacations. Start mapping your BC wine road trip at winebc.com, right here in your backyard. Hello, I'm Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio, year 20. You don't get a medal. There's no certificate. You've got nothing to hang on your wall unless you make it yourself. Luke Whittall has got his own career going. He's a wine writer. He's a podcaster. These are the wonderful Sipster's Pocket Guide to 50 More Must-Try Wines, 1, 2, and 3. And believe it or not, I could hold up handfuls. How many are there total?
There's 5 in total. There's 2 from Ontario as well.
So now here's the thing. We can look back on that. I hope you're well, by the way. Welcome
Thank
to the
you.
Show. Well, welcome right. to the show.
Thank you.
Started 20 years ago in a studio in a barn on the Naramata bench when I discovered to my horror that there was no radio show weekly doing wine in the Okanagan. They did it as news. They did it as so they would, somebody would drop in on a morning show, but nobody had dedicated a half hour or 20 minutes or an hour to wine in the Okanagan. And every one of those stations that were not doing that had gone to the CRTC and said, we'll reflect our community. We'll bring you stories from around us, all around us. Well, that's the biggest story in the valley.
Yeah, it was huge. I remember when you launched. I remember. I never got to visit your barn, but I do remember that.
It was the best studio I ever had. The best. Because I put the floor, beautiful floor down, put all of the albums and things and tapes in the horses' stalls. It was fantastic.
Nice.
And out the French doors, I could see vineyards to my left, vineyards straight ahead. It was Township 7. And I could see the roof of Poplar Grove. And when harvest time came, and those shotguns, the propane shotguns.
For bird cannons.
Yeah, bird cannons. Every 30, 40 seconds, they would go off around me. And I'd have to, I'd stop my question, and I'd say, boom. Okay, and then I'd ask the question. I got a body thing going. Anyway, that was the best thing about that studio.
I remember doing a tour with some friends of mine. They were in the Navy. And they'd never been to the Okanagan before. And I remember we're driving past, I think it was in June, we're driving past cherry orchards.
Yeah.
And they started going off. And I could see them just getting a little tense. And I was like, oh, no, they're bird cannons. It's all good.
It's all good.
Then they relaxed. It was pretty funny.
Trying to save the crops. Okay, so what's keeping you busy right now? This time in your life, we know that there's a season in front of us. We know the spring releases are coming, all of the festivals. But what's keeping you busy?
What's keeping me busy right now is getting ready for this season coming up. It's been, I haven't done a Sipster's book, and the last one I released was about a year and a bit ago. And of course, I work in the wine industry here in the Okanagan. I live in Okanagan Falls, and it's just kind of that cycle of the year where it's starting to get warm. It was like 18 degrees today and beautiful and sunny, and it's, you know, mid-March, I guess now.
Yeah.
But it's getting that vibe, that feeling now in the Okanagan that it's go time, and you can see people driving around a little more happy and anxious to get going. It's like we're getting dressed up to go to a party, but we haven't gotten to the party yet. You know, we've got that energy, the party energy going, but we're just not there.
But there is a priority. Well, first of all, it's bud break. And the second thing is green in the vineyards, real green, mm-hmm. vineyard green. That's to celebrate, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And in the Okanagan, there was a lot last year. It was a little bit less. And what I thought was interesting driving around the valley last year was that, you know, you could see some of the places that had more damage from the previous years than others. And it was really disheartening in a lot of places. I mean, some of these places got really decimated. The Similkameen in particular, I remember driving around there last spring, and it was just heartbreaking, you know. But there, we seem to have bounced back. There's going to be a really, really good vintage coming from 2025. I've heard nothing but amazing things from some of the winemakers that I've talked with. And then, of course, listening to your podcast last week when you had John Weber on here, and I just was so happy listening to that, and I got so thirsty for their Gamay. I haven't had their Gamay in a few years. And
I wrote it in the top of my list, Gamay in block letters.
Oh my God, that just made me want. I started my new shopping list for this year based on that.
Gamay.
There's
a Gamay project going on a couple of spots here on Vancouver Island in the Cowichan Valley. And if they can grow Gamay here, I'm never leaving.
Be a tough reason to not go, that's for sure. It's definitely it's a lovely grape, and it's underrated, and it's still kind of under the radar, even though the people who have it on their radar know about it, and they seem to be quite loyal up to it, which I think is interesting. And I remember doing my wine classes where we talked about Beaujolais Nouveau and all these sort of, you know, Beaujolais wines, which really commanded at that time anyways in the you know, 20 years ago, commanded almost zero respect, which was unfortunate because some of those wines are fantastic. Yeah. You know, it's a really, really interesting thing. And I love Gamay because of that, you know.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Wine BC. This is BC Wine Country, made for wandering. Take the scenic route through warm sunshine, vineyard views, and back roads worth exploring. Sip crisp whites, savor expressive reds, settle in for live music, wide open skies, and unhurried vacations. Start mapping your BC wine road trip at winebc.com, right here in your backyard. The segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Hester Creek Estate Winery, located on the beautiful Golden Mile Bench, just south of Oliver in the Okanagan Valley. Hester Creek is happy to announce that after a couple of years hiatus, their Old Vines Trevigiano is back. Join them April the 3rd for their groovy 60s-themed Welcome Back Baby release party. Tickets are available online at hestercreek.com. Terrafina Restaurant is now open for the season. Lunch, Wednesday to Sunday from 11 to 4. Dinner, daily from 5 to 8. Reservations are recommended. Details at hestercreek.com. I think there's probably a book coming, and you actually gave me a bit of a heads up that it's going to be about cider.
Yeah, that's a more recent obsession for me is learning about the world of cider and not just sort of comparing it to wine, because I don't think it needs comparison, but it is a very, very interesting and a very different world. It's not quite as based on the seasons as wine is. And the other thing that I find really interesting about it is that it's not really sort of a regional specific kind of thing. Everybody who talks about cider, if you listen to cider podcasts, they always talk about, you know, Ciderland or Ciderville or welcome, and it's always very welcoming. Welcome to these Planet Cider, that kind of thing. And you know, and it doesn't matter if the podcast is from the United States or Canada. Oh, I don't think there's a cider podcast from Canada, but or Europe or something like that. Nobody really cares. It's you're all on the same Planet Cider, and so there's this really sort of you know, there's no fences between neighbors in cider land. And so it's a really, really welcoming kind of vibe, which I love. It's also just got the same kind of complex, like cider itself can have the same similar complexities to what wine has, and they talk about it in the same way, but somehow it comes off as being a little more casual. And I'm just kind of enthralled by that. So I've been studying a little bit about the cider industry in Canada, and trying to learn as much as I can. I've got my cider, you know, tasting notebook all you know, by my side all the time. I always have a wine one too. But
so,
now it's
so Luke, have you been to the cider festival in the pipe shop in North, at foot of Lonsdale, North Vancouver?
No, I haven't, but I've heard about that.
Oh, and my goodness, it's good.
There's a few cider festivals that I'm really, really looking to going to looking forward to going to going to. I was actually going to go as media to the cider conference in Chicago about a year ago, actually. But I had to not go. I pulled out for health reasons. But it was on my, you know, just getting to a cider festival like that just sounds so much fun.
This was fantastic. Foot of Lonsdale. I hope they do it again this year. It really turned me on to the character of the cider makers and what they went looking for. The really, really, really good ones. Old orchards. Orchards that have been abandoned but had not been cut down. On Salt Spring and Bowen, fruit research stations that planted everything, one of everything, and then ran out of funding and had to move away. Getting your hands on those orchards is gold.
Yeah, and like wine, you know, you get these old vineyards, you get these old orchards, and there's some people who don't even, you know, they're looking even beyond the orchards where they're looking for foraged apples. So not even, you know, trees that have come from seeds planted 100 years ago that were, you know, just in the middle of the woods that have then sort of
backyards. You know,
yeah, basically in backyards and wild, you know, wild apple trees, basically, for lack of a better word. So it's very, very intriguing to see what happens.
Our neighbors here in Mill Bay gather once a year, harvest time, and we all sit under these 25 beautiful apple trees that are just outside my window, and we pick everything. It's fantastic. And there's somebody's playing a guitar, and we're and some of it goes to a pig farm for bacon. Some of it goes to the food bank. Some people take their own bags, and everything gets used. Everything is fantastic. So well done on that cider. I'll follow that cider book. Thank you so much.
Yeah, the research part is definitely where I'm at right now. So we're still a few years away from seeing an actual book, but there isn't a book about Canadian cider at all, and I am focusing it on Canadian cider only at this time, because there's lots of American books and lots of European books, but there's nothing about Canada, and we have a very, very dynamic, very, very lively, and very, very creative cider scene in Canada, and it's in every province, which I also find really interesting. Wine is really only BC, Ontario, Nova Scotia, and Quebec, whereas cider is, you know, kind of everywhere, and it's been around for a long time, and some of these places are just getting super creative with what they do, and I just love that.
They wanted to grow up and be like the craft beer makers who were at the time when I first started the whole cider thing. They were, that's all they were talking about was the marketing of craft beer. Well, craft beer is kind of nosediving a bit, but cider is making a run. So it's their turn. Nice timing on the book, by the way. Oh, here they are, the Sipster's Pocket Guide. They're out there. Luke Whittle is our Sipster guide, and he's cut some time out for us in his busy time. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Crafted in BC. Yipes. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Hester Creek Estate Winery, located on the beautiful Golden Mile Bench, just south of Oliver in the Okanagan Valley. Hester Creek is happy to announce that after a couple of years' hiatus, their Old Vines Treviano is back. Join them April the 3rd for their groovy 60s-themed Welcome Back Baby release party. Tickets are available online at hestercreek.com. Terrafina Restaurant is now open for the season. Lunch Wednesday to Sunday from 11 to 4. Dinner daily from 5 to 8. Reservations are recommended. Details at hestercreek.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Hillside Estate Winery on the Naramata Bench. Just like Hillside, you'll be happy to know that the Bistro and the Tasting Room are now open for 2026. And coming with that opening, the Unoaked series, Unoaked Pinot Gris, Unoaked Sauv Blanc, and Unoaked Chardonnay. You can find details and more at hillsidewinery.ca. Luke Whittle, the books are The Sipster's Guide to 50 Must-Try Wines in BC, and the first one came out in, did they put the date on it?
2021.
And so,
2021 or two.
And it's, listen, it's an easy read, but you can imagine the work that went into it, a lot of work. Congratulations on these books.
Thank you. Yeah, it was a lot of work. It was a lot of tasting. I've tasted every single one of those wines. There's 50 different wines in each book, and that includes the two from Ontario that I did as well. That was a challenge, and especially being in BC, it was a challenge to get some of those Ontario wines without actually having to go there. I mean, I did go there, and I did tour to a lot of these places, but I found it a little bit more challenging to find the Ontario wines, or at least be able to access them from where I live in BC.
You know, we're coming up to, let me touch on that subject for a minute. We're coming up to May the 1st, which was suggested out of the Parliament that perhaps new guidelines would be drafted and set in motion to do the free trade of wines across Canada. And we're being nudged. Alberta stepped out of the way and we got that going. And Nova Scotia has signed a contract with Ontario and vice versa. And maybe it's going to happen.
Hopefully. That would be great. You know, there's still producers that I would really love to be able to purchase from Ontario, you know, to buy it from here in BC and have them ship. And small producers, they just either don't want to. I've had producers tell me, no, I can't ship anything to you because you're in British Columbia.
But I can shift to Kansas City.
Exactly. So it's a really it's tough, you know. And I think that would be, it's just to everyone's benefit that we're able to purchase things freely within our own country. It doesn't seem like such a tall ask, really, for some reason, but it seems to be proving difficult.
Remind me to ask you about your podcast before we're done here, okay? Because I'm going to get carried away with Crafted in BC. Of course, we had two cold snaps that decimated many of the vineyards. We've referenced it already in the Okanagan. There were farms, families, wineries that went under simply because they couldn't sustain. And so the idea was Crafted to access fruit from elsewhere that hadn't been cold snapped. Washington State, they have lakes of wine, lakes of fruit, Oregon, Ontario. I'll tell you about that in a second. These are some of the wineries that I talked to: Township 7, Dirty Laundry, Clos du Soleil, Niche, Orofino, Noble Ridge, Spearhead, Le Vieux-Pin, Michael Barche, who I have to go back to because he was in tough shape when I talked to him. He had just lost upwards of 10 vineyards. And he was really struck. Fort Barron's, Hester Creek, Poplar Grove, Hillside, Mayhem was in there as well. And so I've tried to cover the story as best I can, but it's only partial coverage. How about you?
I've tried to follow it. I know I've been to tastings, from my friend Carl Boucher had a really, really fascinating tasting about a year ago, late last spring, when he had about 45 to 50 or so wines produced from international grapes all in one space. And we just were able to taste through all of them and take notes and,
wow,
and compare and try. It was a really, really eye-opening tasting. And he did it with the whites. I think he might have done it. We might be doing another one with reds coming up, I'm sure. But it was really interesting because some wineries really, really had chosen their wines sources really, really well, where they had a wine, they produced a, yeah, you know, if they're known for Pinot Gris and they made a Pinot Gris from fruit from wherever that year, it was still reflective of their house style, which I think was really interesting to see if winemakers can kind of do that. Some of them just went another route and they just chose completely different varieties that they wouldn't normally otherwise have, which I also kind of admire, because it takes a lot of guts to do that, first of all from a marketing perspective,
sure,
but also it allows them to be a little bit creative, and I thought that was really cool too. And it was just a really fun tasting. Most of the time the wines were really quite good. And if the winery was something, if it was a winery that was on my radar that I knew about, that I knew produced really amazing wines, it wasn't a shock that when they brought in grapes from another place that they still produced amazing wines. You know what I mean? So they all stayed true to themselves, you know, for the most part. Labeling got to be a bit crazy because sometimes it's hard to tell where everything came from specifically or things like that. And so there was, I remember at this tasting in particular, there was a lot of discussions about, oh, this winery didn't really, you know, put it on the label, or the labels weren't really that different from their normal brand, which I can understand why they would do that. But, you know, it was a tough, you know, situation to be in. And we were, for the most part, largely thankful for a lot of the Washington State growers that actually had fruit available for us, and they did because they had, you know, contracts fall through from one particular winery in Washington State that allowed them. But also they were very organized, and when this freeze happened, the winery I worked at, I was getting emails within days of the freeze actually happening from growers in Washington State saying, hey, you know, you might have some problems, we got grapes for you. So they were very, very, very well organized. So if it wasn't like, you know, if it seems in the media like a lot of wineries in BC went looking for other places to go, it wasn't really always entirely true. It was really that we were being offered. A lot of wineries were being offered.
And it was all the way around. It was good timing. We helped them. They helped us.
Yeah, I think so. It was fortuitous. Yeah. I'm not sure what. You know, I'm not sure we would be having a really interesting conversation, frankly, if we didn't have the Washington State wineries be quite so organized and available, frankly. You know, it would have been a very different conversation.
Two stories, Luke. I did them back to back, and I don't know if it's Tantalus I'm going to talk about or Spearhead, but same area. One of them, I think it was Spearhead, went looking for the clones, the Riesling clones that they were growing in Ontario, and and that truck when it was, when the harvest happened, that truck was loaded, and 26 hours later those two drivers had it at the crush pad all the way from Ontario. 26 hours. That's how they, I mean, there was a lot of stories about how things got done.
Yeah, you know, and of course I'm in contact with John Schreiner quite often because we co-authored a book together. And we still get together and chat every now and then. And I remember him telling me, he's like, first of all, he's not writing another book, apparently. Like he's done for books. But he's still coming up with ideas for books. And so he came to me. It's like he was trying to sell me the idea for the book. He's like, he's getting all these stories from wineries, like all these crazy adventures that they've gone through in order to get grapes, and some of them, he says, are just absolutely amazing what they've had to go through. So you know, I don't know a lot of them, I only know a few of them, but just from people that I've talked to, but he seemed to be quite fascinated enough for him to think that it would be worthy of putting into a book of its own. So that might happen. You never know. It might be something worth documenting. I think actually it really is. And if I had written my first book, or if I hadn't written my first book yet, you know, about the history of the wine industry here, that would absolutely be part of it. It would have to be part of it. It's a big part of our history now.
Quickly, we're going to take a break here. The tasting that you did for Carl, was this surprising? Were there some that were just outstanding?
There were some that stood out, as there always are. It was a young tasting. Like, I think we were tasting in May, and some of these wines hadn't really been in bottle for more than a month or a month and a half. So some of them did taste a bit shocked. Like, they just weren't showing, you know, all they had. So I didn't get to revisit a lot of them, but I did get to revisit a few. There were some standouts. I was trying to find if I had the right book that I had my tasting notes in, but I don't have it. It's not near me. But I do remember there were some few that we were all talking about. But what I think everyone is interested in was, where's the baseline? You know, how good was the quality just generally? And we were all quite tickled by the really high quality of them.
Our guest is Luke Goodall. He has his own podcast we'll tell you about at the end of this show. And The Sipster's Guides, friends. They're just the greatest read if you want to be a wine fan, just a casual wine fan. If you want to jump in with both feet. We'll be right back. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Hillside Estate Winery on the Naramata Bench. Just like Hillside, you'll be happy to know that the Bistro and the Tasting Room are now open for 2026. And coming with that opening, the Unoaked series, Unoaked Pinot Gris, Unoaked Sauvignon Blanc, and Unoaked Chardonnay. You can find details and more at hillsidewinery.ca. Tasting Room Radio, Terry David Mulligan, Luke Whittle, The Sipster's Guide. 5 Sipster's books in total, 3 about British Columbia and 2 about Ontario. Easily found. We'll give you a website as well. We're back to Crafted for a second. Crafted BC. Basically, our recent history. I had someone, a winemaker, say to me that people were coming up to their tasting room. I'm not tasting that wine. I'm not going to buy that wine because that's American fruit. And I said to him, did you tell them the story of how it's saving farms and farming and the winemakers and the wineries? Yes. And still? Well, then there was no talking to them. There was a lot of that push and shove across tasting counters, yes?
Yeah, I experienced that myself at a couple different wineries. And I know that it was definitely an awkward conversation at first, because all these deals, all this harvest, I mean, everything was in barrels or in tanks, you know, before that election happened. And so this, most of it was all done deals, but by the time that everything got bottled, things had changed quite clearly, you know, about, 12 months ago or 13 months ago. The attitude really, really changed. And I think it wasn't necessarily how far it changed, but I think it was the speed at which it happened. It was just in the news. It was everywhere. You couldn't get away from it. So, you know, brand America really, really suffered. And so to have anything attached to that was made things very difficult. I think a lot of customers who were standing in a wine shop that had come to a winery and were familiar with the winery were generally pretty understanding of it.
Sure.
And I think there was still some people who you know, might have objected at first, but I don't think they really, it didn't stop them from making a purchase or anything. Might have stopped them from buying a case of it instead of, say, only one bottle or something like that. But it didn't hinder them in any way, which I think was really important. I've also noticed that people from BC who remember that it was really cold don't really have a problem with the Craft and BC wines. But customers I've had, and I've had a few conversations with customers from Eastern Canada that don't necessarily
know another story. So you have to
know the story, and they don't know what we went through.
You can't just put a sign up. It's not a sign on a counter. That's not going to do. You have to tell them the story. Lean in and tell them the story. And they're surrounded by these farmers. You don't have to look right outside the door. Crafted in BC. I see that there's going to be case lot sales of wine that didn't get sold. It's going to go out the door pretty quickly. Watch it. This is a good time to be buying wine. By the way, this all started when you sent me a note saying you're watching a Netflix series called Age of Attraction. Age of Attraction. And I went, what the? And then you saw some Q&A wine. Was it on the table?
I did. You know, they were, I don't remember the scene. So whenever I see wine bottles on a TV show, I'm instantly like, "Ooh, who's that? You know, what's that label?" You know, and so I knew they were filming this in and around Whistler and Vancouver. And so if there's going to be wine in a location that where they're filming it in BC, I mean, like, the chances of it being BC wine are actually, you know, pretty good.
Just a half a chance.
Yeah. So my radar was like I was like stopping it and pausing it just to see if I could see what the labels were and everything. And then at some point, and of course, the Q&A labels are like unmistakable. I mean, it's such a beautiful brand, and it's so, like you can see it from a mile away, which is in every marketing book for wine. That's what you want, right? You want something that's easily identifiable from a distance. And so these wines, they were, you know, I saw them. They were doing a tasting outside. They were doing It was kind of a social part of a social part of the show, I think, at some point. And it was in a couple times.
Very nice.
At some point, yeah. And it was a white and a red too, so it must have been
nice. Very nice.
It wasn't just one bottle. It was a couple in there.
I'm still not going to watch Age of Attraction. I'm sorry.
I was watching it for a friend.
Of course you were.
It was on in the background. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
All right, let me change subject for a second here. I've written these titles down. Events. Barnyard, the Natural Wine Festival here in Victoria. And Free Spirit, that's Curtis Colt, next Thursday. In Victoria, and Top Drop. Let's just talk about no and low alcohol. Are you seeing signs of it?
Yeah, you know, part of it was really interesting, especially when I was writing the Sipsters book. The first Sipsters book, I was sort of hoping there would be a no alcohol wine. Actually, it was the second one where I decided to put in a wine. I broke my own rule, and I said I'm going to include a wine that had no alcohol in it. And the only one I could find that was in our market here in BC was a Piquette, like a no alcohol Piquette from Benjamin Bridge in Nova Scotia. So I broke my rule about having it all from BC. I mean, it was available in BC. And then I included, and no sooner had I got the proofs for the, you know, the book, than I got an email from Tyler Harlton, who was like, hey, I've got a new, you know, no alcohol, low alcohol wine brand. And I thought, great, this is fantastic. Clearly, this was on the forefront, and the Sipsters books were really trying to show what the, you know, what was coming. It was supposed to be, you know, you know, this is what's going to be happening kind of thing. And I was all for it. And I thought, well, this is cool. And then the no alcohol thing started to really, really build, and it became
off.
Oh yeah, as and which is great, and I thought, well, this is cool, and then there started to take on a bit of a kind of a rivalry in some ways between people in the industry who were kind of offended in some ways by the no alcohol thing, which I think, you know, they produce wine that has alcohol, so maybe, you know, they're just trying to, you know, guard their market, which
sure.
I understand. But what I like about it, and I was just at a Cactus Club or somewhere last night at a restaurant, and I noticed that the wine list had they had a great wine list, they had a great cocktail list, they had a great thing, but they also had like a whole section of, you know, mocktails. So they didn't call it mocktails, but they were what we would have called mocktails, you know, really nice, creative drinks that just had no, alcohol in it. And I thought, well, that's great. You know, that's really, so suddenly now we've got more, first of all, consumers have more choice.
Well,
second
much,
of all,
yeah.
Restaurants get to be creative
yes.
with things. And drink
bitters,
makers
lots
get
of
to
bitters.
Be
bitters the
so
bitters
cool.
industry is going crazy.
Yeah, yeah. So it's really neat when we get all these flavors and possible combinations and things like that from other sources that, you know, we wouldn't necessarily normally see.
I have just enough time to talk about your podcast, if it's okay. What are you calling it?
It's the Sipsters podcast, and I started focusing on wine, but I used to call it the Sipsters Wine Podcast, but now I'm interested in other things. I've had an apothecary on there who was talking about, you know, she distilled her own perfumes and things like that in Prince Edward County. Fantastic thing. Anything involving the senses is really what I'm interested in talking about. So most of the time that's wines and drinks and things like that, but it could be food, could be perfumes, it could be soap, it could be anything. I mean, it's really all things that are sensory is what I'm interested in exploring.
Could be mantras.
Mantras.
Yeah.
Yep.
Music.
You know. But experiences
it can
with
heal.
Music, you know that. I mean, I know that my experience. So, for instance, my experience when I put on the DVD of The Last Waltz, I know that my experience watching it is very different than what you experienced when you were there. So, you know, you could smell that room, you could smell that ballroom, right? And you knew what was, you could hear it in a very different way. It's what I'm interested in those kind of experiences. And that's really where I'm trying to guide Sipsters right now.
And how do we find your podcast?
Sipsters.ca.
And how do we find your website?
Sipsters.ca, same thing. It's all the books are there, and it's links to the podcast. I've also got another Substack called Sipsters Icons, which is if you don't want to listen to anything and you prefer to read it, you can read all kinds of stuff from there.
Thank you for guesting. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
The Sipsters Guides, check them out. Luke Whittle is our guest on Tasting Room Radio.